New Zealanders want and deserve a transparent and comprehensive inquiry into the COVID-19 response, not another whitewash. That's why RCR is bringing you a special segment aimed at examining the terms of reference, as well as what the country's best and brightest minds believe should be put on the table and why. The inquiry sessions will endeavour to unpack everything we already know and all the things we still don't know about how the COVID response was handled and what needs to be included in any new inquiry so that New Zealanders can get answers, justice and a future free from government overreach. Welcome to the inquiry sessions.
Welcome back to Reality Check Radio. Now, if you've been on social media or just seen the news recently, you would have been seeing this sponsored ad by the New Zealand Royal Commission asking people, the public, to share their experiences on what I call the COVID era. The COVID era. And, you know, God knows it's not over yet. And this is following the new government, the coalition's agreeing to open a new inquiry on our COVID response as a country. And New Zealand has pretty much followed suit with many other Western countries who are doing the same. But despite all the hoo-ha about it, the scope of this inquiry still seems relatively limited. All you're being asked is to submit your answers to two questions. The first one being, looking back, what would you like the inquiry to know about your experiences of the pandemic? And question two, moving forward, what lessons should we, the New Zealand Royal Commission, learn from our experiences so we can be as prepared as possible for a future pandemic? Now, I don't know about you. Neither of those inspire much confidence in me. But submit to these questions and more details we must. The inquiry, the initial submissions to these end on the 24th of March. That's not very far away. And to encourage New Zealanders, especially the rural provincial New Zealanders, to have their voices heard on this, we have with us today, Don and I are very happy to welcome back on the show Bernadette Hunt and Jason Herrick, both Southland farmers. Thank you guys for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome.
Great to have them back. It's been a few months and both of them on the show last year, Jaspreet. So, you know, friendly faces back in our midst, that's great. So it's not a great topic we've got on today, but you know, it's got to be broached, hasn't it? It's a subject that's burning people up inside. Many people are bottling up what happened to them. And part of our role in RCR Greenwashed is to flush this stuff out and encourage people like you, Bernadette and Jason, to help with your circle of friends to feel brave enough to do it as well. Because you two, I know, are quite brave. So look, let's hope your colleagues can be brave. So yeah, in the end, it's as Jaspreet said, everything seems to be a bit low key so far, and we would like to steal up the government, effectively the coalition, to make their Royal Commission have a bit more teeth. Mm. Yeah, is that fair? Is that fair, Jaspreet?
Absolutely, because otherwise we would be spending, I don't know, a few millions on this, if I know anything, between consultants and everything. And let's get some bang for our buck. So if you may, Bernadette, could we begin from you? Personally speaking, as someone who's working in the rural space, how were you affected by the mandates?
Oh, in a myriad of ways. I guess the first and foremost thing was that I felt very, very uncomfortable about the pressure being put on people to get vaccinated without even having an opportunity to really find out about what that even meant. And like, I never publicly spoke out against the vaccine. I spoke out very strongly against the mandates, and against the pressure, because I saw rural people disappearing to the back corners of their farms and becoming recluse because they felt so, you know, you'd turn on the radio and, you know, popular rural radio hosts were slamming people that weren't just running to the nearest place to get vaccinated. And then you open the media from your farming support organisations and you'd be being pushed to get vaccinated. And you turn on the television and people that you valued and trusted are pushing you to get vaccinated, even though none of those people have any health expertise whatsoever. And I saw people getting into a real mental health strife because they were just becoming recluse from all the pressure. And farmers by nature tend to question science and tend to want to know some facts before they put products into their body or into their animal's body or anything else. And it was forbidden to ask questions. Like, it seemed like it was forbidden. So that was the first and foremost way it affected me and people around me. But it spiraled from there. As soon as I spoke out against those mandates or against the pressure, even before there was even mandates, I suddenly was shunned from a couple of boards that I was on, local community boards that I gave my time to, and actually really strongly pressured into stepping down off both of those boards. And honestly, I just felt like I didn't belong in the community anymore, in a community that I'd given a huge amount of volunteer time and effort to. I didn't want to go to town anymore. So I became one of those recluses as well. It was awful. It was awful.
Wow.
Well, I don't think we expected that powerful opening, Bernadette. That was beyond what I could have expected to hear from you. And it's a great start, as sad as it is. It's a great start to this interview process that RCR and especially Greenwashed are embarking upon. So, Jason, what was your experience at that same time? Because, yeah, I can absolutely feel Bernadette's hurt from that. It sort of happened to me as well, but not to the same extent, perhaps. And I'm older. I don't have family to sort of get that that. Yeah, feedback the way that it would be affecting your children as well, I imagine. So look, let's go to you, Jason, as well, and see what you felt at that time.
So my experiences were very similar to Bernadette's, right? And very heavily involved in my local community here. And the way I got shunned out of local community, all of my sports clubs, all of my representative, all my committees, all my boards I sat on, I did a lot, and it felt like the public were being tested to see who was going to conform and who wasn't, and conform they did, and I just got completely isolated. And, you know, so I basically got isolated to my farm, and I've been down this road of depression and anxiety before with a mental breakdown back in 2018, where I did isolate myself a lot, and I felt exactly that, right? So I went through all of those emotions again. Over that period, and I felt like I was being pushed into a part of society, you know, that I didn't want to be in, right? I was being treated as a leper. I was being treated as a diseased person, and I wasn't allowed to go anywhere or do anything.
Listeners, these two people we've got on are community leaders, really did the right thing by the community in their form in those years, and to be ostracized the way they're talking about is not acceptable. Yeah, a lot of us felt this ostracism. A lot of us felt it, and telling these stories are so vital. So,
I still live in the small rural town where I lived, and when we moved in 2020 to Tuatapere when this began, and my kids were 3 and 5 at that point, and we were still going to playgroup and so on. And I remember next year getting mandated out of that, and at such a small place, and we're out in the sticks, and you're trying to explain to a 3-year-old what happened here. The same thing happened at the swim club. So I was as a volunteer secretary at the local club, and even though it was just a volunteer position because of what was going on, I myself gracefully bowed out. But the best or the worst thing of it all was I could swim on my own. You know, when the swim club was not in session, say one morning I could go to the pool, swim on my own, everything was fine. But when I was dropping my kids off to swim lessons that afternoon for the club, I had to sit outside and watch them. And I had a 3-year-old who was just beginning to swim, and I used to keep waving to him from the mom's here. Because my husband would say to me, he says, why do you do this to yourself? Just leave them there or come back. You know, the farm is one paddock pretty much backs the pool. And I'm like, no, I'm not actually going to do that. If my being there makes somebody uncomfortable, that's on them. That's not on me. If I'm sitting outside and the whole lot of parents are going past me inside, big deal. Let's do this. And I remember it being very, very uncomfortable then, and you know, sort of having to stand your ground on. But one did it.
So fast forward again back to today. Mm. What's the community feel like for both of you now? Has it changed, or are you still feeling a little bit of isolation and tension? Bernadette, how do you facing the day at the moment?
To be perfect, it's really interesting how just having this conversation has brought back old feelings. And I think that's probably the reality for many people. And it might be why things are relatively quiet on the front with the inquiry, because it's not really nice stuff to tune back up. To be honest, I think the vast majority of people that were the worst behaved during that period of time realised that they were badly behaved and they're carrying on like nothing ever happened. People that were the most vicious during that time, you'd bump into them in the street and they're almost overly nice. They know they did wrong. They'll never admit it. They'll never apologise. But it's like they expect us to just forget it ever happened, and that's really hard to do. So, no, I don't feel like I'm ostracised anymore, but I do feel like I've withdrawn myself quite a lot. I've no desire to immerse myself back into a lot of the local community stuff that I once did. I do still do a lot, don't get me wrong, but I'm just not boots and all the way I was. There are some things I will never get involved in because of the people that are connected there that I just don't want to have anything to do with, you know, as a result of all of this. And I just feel like I'm less naive, I'm maybe more cynical, and I'm not so quick to trust as I was. And I don't think that'll ever change. That, you know, we move on and we get on with life, but you know, you don't forget. And that's what it comes down to, really.
Yeah. So Jason, I see you're nodding. Are you have you got any extra experiences?
So I'm very much the same, and being ostracised out of the community that I was involved in, like I was the president of the local golf club, I was the club captain and president of the local squash club and all those sorts of things, and being completely ostracised out of those and community committees. And nowadays they behave like nothing ever happened, right? And they're questioning, why aren't you getting involved? Why aren't you coming back? Well, you know, why would I want to get myself involved in something when I know that if something like this happens again, the same's going to happen? I'm like Bernadette. I've lost my trust for a lot of people, and I've lost my trust in society as a whole, knowing that they're very quick to conform and kick you out when you have shown to be a very integral part of your community. Like, I'm still doing quite a bit, but nowhere near the amount I ever used to, you know. And the effect that long-term effects this is having on people, it's all the relationships and the families that broke up in the meantime too. You know, my parents went through absolute hell, losing their best friends because their best friends decided to conform, and that was the only way to go, and they wouldn't listen, and you know, and it's and they didn't want to be around them and so on because they were, you know, so that sort of thing happened all the time as well. So it's broken families, it's broken relationships, it's broken up friendships, it's completely destroyed and ripped our society apart as a whole and created more division. You know, and there's more and more that happening every day. And regardless of whether there's a pandemic on, it still happens on every facet of our lives that we're living at the moment.
I agree with that. Actually, I just would add that, you know, I feel like there still is a very quick judgment in the community. And anybody that questions mainstream stuff, and it's massive in the farming community, you know, either you buy into all of the virtue signaling and the social license stuff, or you're a conspiracy theorist, just like all you COVID deniers. You know, like it feels like there's now, it's now okay to cast people into a lot based on one kind of thing. It feels like that's a society norm now, and it's accepted and not frowned on. You know, if the same thing happens on the basis of race, then, you know, or gender, God forbid, if you, you know, judge people based on gender choices. But we can judge people absolutely no problem at all based on whether they toe a politically correct line on something, which I just find mind-blowing.
Yeah. I'm looking back now, there's some services in the rural sector that got lost. Out here, we had, and I'm happy to speak about this, the person who was doing the scouts for the children, she got mandated, because Scouts and Guides New Zealand mandated. And even after the mandates dropped, that never came back. So mm-hmm. She never joined, because just like you guys are saying, I guess, you know, when one loses the passion to do something for which you were so unceremoniously chucked out. And for a small place, you know, in the backwaters of rural Southland, losing something that kids would enjoy and that kept them gainfully occupied once a week, that is really sad. And I'm no doubt, you know, I know friends who no longer go on hunts and riding events because they got mandated out of outdoor riding events and stuff like that. Many of them have never gone back.
Yeah, so moving on from that part of the discussion, and I know, Jason, you're sort of involved with more local support groups. I mean, you both are, but just quickly, can you explain perhaps what you are able to talk about with regard to people that are into self-harm and perhaps some mental illness growth in the province?
Yep. So one of my passions these days, especially after going through my mental breakdown, is the mental health side of things in the rural sector, right? And I've got a lot of I spend a lot of time in that sector, involved in a charitable trust on mental health, and travel up and down the country from time to time and do local events. But I'm also fielding a lot of phone calls from a lot of stressed out, strung out people. And the last 3 years especially, you could dive right into this and point the blame at the government has caused a lot of this and the way they responded to the COVID pandemic. And the extra cost that they've put on the country, the costs of running a business, the pressures, social pressures are immense on people. And, you know, mental health is getting worse. It's not getting better. It is getting worse and on many fronts. So that's what we're seeing out there at the moment. That's what we're hearing often. We've just gone through the local field days just recently, and that was a field days of window shopping and mental health. People come along to those field days to talk, to get off farm, to come to there and just reach out and be social.
Yep. So, yeah, I can feel it in the communities. It's sad, but good that you've been able to talk about it. And I hope that, this discussion does encourage people to bring their issues to the fore. I don't want them all go on your shoulders, Jason. I hope your people around you can have the strength to fill and make sure they make submissions to this inquiry. And we'll move on a little bit further. We had MIQ. Did either of you know anyone in MIQ that was seriously compromised by it all? And secondly, did you have any family or close friends that were stuck in MIQ or sort of perhaps had an elderly or a friend passing away with no support around them? Was that something both of you or either of you had a experience of?
Yes, I did. My grandmother was in a rest home at the time and got completely isolated. Now, she was a very social person, loved visitors every day. She didn't have visitors every day, entertaining people. You know, I'm 100% in the belief that the isolation killed her in the end, and because she just lost all hope for life. She loved connection with people, and I get phone calls from her, and she's screaming down the phone to me saying, you know, just tell them that you're coming to see me. Don't take no for an answer, and, you know, rah, 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 rah. But you just couldn't get in the door. It was locked, you know, without, you know, creating a scene and smashing windows and so forth. Like, you couldn't get in the place. And it was completely unfair, especially on her elderly. You know, I love my grandmother to bits. And I spent as much time with her as I could because she was in her late 80s. But, you know, it was unfair. It was unjust. It was cruel, absolutely cruel, the way our elderly got treated, 100%. And I won't forgive our government for that, for the people that made those decisions, made those and put those rules in place. I won't forgive them for that. Absolutely never, because I firmly believe that that was her demise.
Well, you're not alone in thinking like that, I can assure you, but we're glad that you can express those sentiments in this interview. Bernadette, how about you? People very close into your network, did you have anyone suffer the same sort of stuff?
Not that I know, you know, very, very close. Look, there was a lot of stories of awful things that were going on, you know, for people that, you know, local business owners who were stuck in Australia and couldn't get back to run their business, and they were stuck there for months. You know, there were some awful, awful situations. And I think one of the interesting aftermaths of that is actually it made people, me included, fearful to travel for quite a long time. You just didn't want to leave your family. you know, that is one thing it did, was brought our family much closer together. But yeah, it did make us quite fearful of travel for quite a long time. And to be honest, it's still something pretty aware of. You know, you never imagined that the doors could just get closed. So yeah, but no, I was fortunate to not have a real, you know, any close connections that were badly affected like that.
I remember, Don, that first winter when that happened, and we had, not us immediately, but I know of people who had staff stuck overseas who couldn't get back. And I remember that first carving was pretty crazy for a lot of people. Somebody was hiring storage in town to get, and this is, I mean, there was nothing else to be done. They just had one worker cottage, which had this gentleman who was overseas, his stuff. So they hired a storage unit, put his stuff there, hired someone else, and so on and so forth, until I think that guy never came back ever. And those sort of stories are a dime a dozen. It's happened to so many people that year. And one doesn't, you know, one can think of the medical ramifications, the financial ramifications, but all of this really added to the pressures one was facing. I remember, and I could be wrong, but I seem to remember a column by Steve Wynn Harris in Farmers Weekly around that time. And, you know, this is a column I'd been reading for quite a while, pretty much 15 years since I'd been coming, since I moved to New Zealand. And he had written, and I didn't know whether he meant it flippantly, that farmers are used to vaccinating. You know, we've done hundreds of thousands of sheep in our time, and the government should be equipping guys like him. And they can be going out, and because the rural rate is not, vaccination rate is not picking up. And all those sort of added pressures, those sort of columns, you turn on the radio in the car, and the same thing. 2021 is when we cut our TV off. We just couldn't bear it. I told my husband, I said, it's either a case of I break it, I throw something at it, or we just have Netflix and cut this shit out. And that's what we did.
Yeah, well, Steve Wynn Harris, well known to be a left off-center commentator. So look, not surprising he joined in the fray with his preferred party. He's well known, his political belief. But, you know, he's a great writer, and he's got a right to say what he did, and yeah, he'd bear the consequence. So, you know, I hope he's taking a deep gulp. Deep breaths right now, because to me, he got it completely wrong. His arrogance in that article was palpable. So look, you know, the big thing now is, what do we want out of this inquiry? What is it that's at the nub of it for you? Let's say three or four things. What are the key things you want out of this inquiry that perhaps aren't being talked about right now? Because it does seem to have quite a meek terms of reference currently.
Accountability's got to be one. You know, these guys have got to be held accountable for the decisions that they made, because they can't have been lawful. Making people do stuff without, you know, their consent can't be lawful. You know, so that is absolute number one for me. And you know, it's they've got to dive into the inquiry to the point where it's going to satisfy all of New Zealand society, right? That everyone's questions get answered. And that's what these submissions should be, right? You know, these are the questions that the people want answered. These are the ones we need to focus on. You know, it's got to be clear. It's got to be concise, and it's got to be open. You know, they were supposed to be the most transparent government ever, and I think they're the most closed-off government ever. You know, let's just call it as it is. Let's be truthful. Let's put it all out there. No matter how much damage it's going to do, everyone's got the right to know the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd like to, I don't think we'll ever get an apology, but I'd love there to be some recognition that, look, with the benefit of hindsight, we have learned these things. That, you know, we've learned that actually the knee-jerk reaction was a wrong decision. We shouldn't have acted so fast. We should have applied due diligence. There was no justification for the actions that were taken. I'd love to hear something like that. But most importantly, the reason that I'd like to hear that is so that it doesn't happen again. Because I've got no confidence right now that the same decisions wouldn't be taken again. I mean, the government that we've got now, they were on the same path. I don't think anything would have been different, to be perfectly honest, with a different government. So I've got very little faith that the same thing wouldn't be repeated if we would end up with another pandemic next week. So that's why this inquiry is important, is to show up that it was unlawful, that the decisions that were made caused immense harm, and no, I don't think they caused any benefit. And it was just plain wrong. Human rights were overridden, probably ultimately for financial benefit to certain people who had too much influence.
100%. And when you look at what's happening today, you have Jacinda Ardern, she's in Harvard right now. We have Grant Robertson, our finance minister at the time, taking the helm of affairs at Otago University, a $640,000 payday by what I hear. It is. And I have no words for this, but it's just diabolical to see this happening. And yet here we are. And that is why I think it's absolutely important that as many of us put out our submissions to this and ask for a wider scope. Because going by the two questions, especially the second one, how can we be as prepared as possible for the next pandemic? Good Lord.
I think one of the interesting things, I'll be really honest here, maybe I'll be frowned on for saying this, but I didn't actually realise they were calling for, they'd just put it out there publicly for two questions to be answered. And I'm probably typical of many people that went through what we did during that COVID era, where I've switched off most media. I appear in the media, I'm probably interviewed more in the media and write for the media more than I listen or read it. Well, I am, no doubt about it. I don't watch the news. I don't listen to radio shows. I listen to things that I choose to listen to, none of which is media, including, dare I say it, things like this, because actually I just got so tired. I just didn't want to be, and I've intentionally moved myself away from this stuff to the point where it really kind of churned up some emotion starting to talk about it again, because I really have put it out of my mind, and I worry that that's going to impact the outcomes of the inquiry, because how many people like me are there that even don't know those questions are there to be answered? I knew there was an inquiry, but I hadn't looked into it at all, but also don't really want to dredge it all up again and therefore don't respond.
Yeah, and that's what you're trying to highlight, that we need to be submitting on this. I hate the word submission though. Every time it comes to me, but we need to be putting our thoughts to paper and letting them know in no uncertain terms that the shambles is not acceptable. A repeat of this can never happen.
You've inspired me to take some action on it. I was reasonably oblivious to the fact that I could actually be involved in it. So, you know, just asking me to be here and be part of this interview. hopefully people hear, you know, my response to it and have a similar. But yeah, I do think we all have to get the word out there, because there'll be a lot of us that are oblivious to it.
Yeah, and you know, in rural New Zealand, we're in a minority, but you know, our voice still has to count. And so please just implore people that are listening to go to the website, understand what it's about, and really lay it bare. That's what we've got to have done for the people that'll be reading these the output from citizens. They need to have everything laid in front of them, warts and all. As unpalatable as some of it will, it'll be, they need to hear it. Because Jaspreet and I know, look, we've got Bernadette and Jason on, but we know lots of people who have been at the coalface of this, and there's been some rotten stuff go on that just can't be swept under the carpet.
Completely.
I dare say, you know, we've just come to the end and sort of say thank you to Bernadette and Jason for their help, because this is helping us a lot. Sort of the beginning of our, perhaps a 3-week campaign, maybe, Jaspreet, to
absolutely get as many people before
March 24. So look, all the best for you two for the weeks and months ahead, and yeah, we really love having you on RCR, because you're just so candid with your thoughts, and we both know that you're really sensitive, intelligent people, and we value your output. So thank you for coming on RCR Greenwashed.
Thank you for all you're doing, because it's, you know, it's really important.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Thank you.
Thank you so much, guys, for coming on. That was Jason Herrick and Bernadette Hunt, two Southland farmers, urging you to have your say on this Royal Commission of Inquiry on the shambles that New Zealand's COVID response was. If you need more help with your submission, please go to www.voicesforfreedom.co.nz or to www.realitycheck.radio, and you will find more details on how to proceed with this. Thank you so much for joining us today. 2057 is our number, or inbox at therate realitycheck.radio.
Keeping the COVID inquiry honest, it's time for the inquiry sessions.